Well, I think the hotspot that we're seeing evolve is two areas. One is the persona. Who's going to use the data? Because that audience is expanding greatly, especially with the onset of Gen AI. And the second is the breadth of the use cases around the term analytics. You know, because if you go and ask people, explain analytics with SAP data to me, I think a lot of people are still going to think of visualization and dashboard. In my opinion, AI is a part of analytics. ML is a part of AI. Gen AI is a part of all that. So like it's all part of one big giant stack.
Hello and welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. I'm Carsten Bangel, founder and CEO of Bark, and my guest today is Matt Hayes. He leads the global SAP business and strategy for Qlik, is very deep into the SAP ecosystem, and describes himself as an SAP fanatic in his LinkedIn profile. Matt is the right person to talk to about SAP architecture modernization, because we see a lot going on in that field. There are new solutions that SAP customers can acquire that are cloud-based, like Datasphere, SAC. There is a migration wave going on to S/4HANA on the ERP side. So there's a lot going on in terms of modernization. We will drill down into the data analytics space, obviously. We start with discussing the drivers and challenges SAP customers face when modernizing their architectures. And we'll talk also about the use cases. So what is being done? What are the modern use cases SAP customers implement? We also take a look at the hotspots in an architecture where modernization is going on, and we hear a lot of Matt's advice how SAP customers should approach the topic. Enjoy the episode. Hey, Matt, great to have you on my podcast today.
Hey, Carsten, how are you doing? It's great to be here.
I'm great. I hope you too, because we have a serious topic today. And you are one of the big experts in the market around SAP, the SAP ecosystem. So I thought we'd talk about the ongoing architecture modernization that we both observe is going on in the SAP ecosystem. And I wanted to start by asking you, so what do you see? What are the major drivers and challenges SAP customers need to address today when they are thinking about modernizing their data and analytics architecture?
Wow, there is so much going on. I think, you know, looking at the scope of digital transformation, it just seems to keep evolving. It's never over. It's definitely like it's a journey. It's not a destination. And you know what we see out there, especially in the SAP market right now, is a lot of transformations. Customers are still moving to HANA as the database. There's still a few stragglers out there that are staring at that 2027 deadline and figuring it out. We're seeing a large number of our customers lift and shift or move to the S/4HANA platform. That's been ongoing for several years, and it's interesting to watch customers on that journey, whether they're doing, you know, direct brownfield upgrades or greenfield. We see a lot of greenfield out there, a lot of customers taking the opportunity to kind of reimagine their SAP implementation on S4, and then of course the move to cloud. That's a big push, you know, with everything that SAP is doing with RISE. It's all about getting customers to accomplish those three goals in their transformation, and that's not any one of them is not a small task. So we see customers sometimes tackling all three of them at once. And then when you look at the data journey, separate from the architecture, we see customers really challenged with looking at where they're going with their analytics and AI frameworks going forward. So there's a whole transformation journey happening within that stack as well.
Yeah, and it's interconnected, obviously. I mean, a lot of the new data analytics products are cloud-oriented or cloud-based. So one comes with the other in a certain degree. So let's talk about the major components in here. And what we actually get most questions around is the future of SAP BW and the positioning of Datasphere and what's going on with Datasphere. What's your take on that?
Yeah, this is interesting, and we've kind of had a front seat to this. I would say that most of our customers, I boil it down, you know, internally to our discussions with customers often revolve around the topic of Beyond BW. That's what we've really termed it. Beyond BW is because when we speak to SAP customers, they're saying that we're trying to figure out what to do next. Either we're going to keep our BW legacy environment or upgrade our BW and have it continue to provide reports and some of the stuff that it's always been doing while we modernize our analytics stack, or we're going to move beyond BW and move away from BW, whether it's BW for HANA is not a good fit, whether Datasphere is the right fit, or, which is really interesting, we're seeing a lot of these analytics projects being driven by the broader organization or the broader IT organization, and not necessarily from the SAP core team. So when you look at it specifically from an SAP standpoint, there's an evolution from BW to Datasphere that's in that SAP ecosystem. But separate from that, the analytics project might be run from a broader set of decision makers and leaders that are looking at other technologies. And there are quite a few technologies out there that are now competing with the SAP stack, whether it be Snowflake, Databricks, some of the cloud solutions like Microsoft Fabric, Google BigQuery, et cetera. And a lot of those have really started capturing some of those BW customers while SAP's, really tried to figure out what to do with Datasphere. So now Datasphere is on the scene, and SAP is kind of looking at it saying, wow, this is actually more competitive than we thought it would be. We thought it would be a straightforward move our BW customers to Datasphere, and it's not that way. And we see customers really struggling with that, and we see SAP trying to figure out how to wedge Datasphere in, especially when customers have already made architecture decisions.
Yeah, what we can observe is with many SAP customers that there is definitely rising heterogeneity. Yeah, so even if they are buying and implementing other solutions, and you mentioned many of them that we now also see with a lot of SAP customers, they still continue with some of the SAP systems. Do you see the same, or do they really move away from SAP?
I see a little bit of both. We have customers that say that, from an analytics or an AI standpoint, 90% of their data or more is held in SAP applications. And when that's the case, the SAP stack is always going to make sense. It's always going to make the most sense. But that's only going to be about 10 to 15% of customers. I think that a majority of SAP customers, 80, 85% or more, have larger enterprise environments where the SAP data might be the most important data, the most valuable data, because it's their core ERP system. It's how they're running their business. But it might only represent 40, 50, 60% of their enterprise data. They might have a lot of non-SAP applications that they're using to run their business, whether it be other manufacturing applications, ServiceNow, Salesforce, other big scale applications, as well as other applications that provide unstructured data, a lot of IoT data that is coming in. So when customers have a variety of data like that, they tend to look for what's the best fit for their use cases, what's the best fit for what they're trying to achieve in a business outcome. And it's not always going to be the SAP stack. I mean, I look at it and say, okay, on the ERP side, SAP's got this figured out. It's locked down. The application architecture is solid. It's always been solid. But SAP struggled with their cloud messaging. They struggled with analytics. They've struggled with SAP Analytics Cloud. Those are areas where customers have data coming from other sources, and they need to figure out what's the best for their architecture. And yes, a lot of it is SAP-centric, but a lot of it's not. And it's an interesting scenario, because in this world of analytics and AI, data has become the currency. Data is the most important piece. Data is the enabler to everything. So, companies like SAP are looking at it saying, okay, how can we capture most of the data? Where can we create gravity? And, for SAP, HANA is the answer there. That's where they look to create the gravity, not only around the native SAP application data, but also trying to capture non-SAP data into them. When you get into that analytics framework, it definitely gets to be a little bit more competitive, because it's a different game than ERP.
Do you see a lot of HANA instances that have non-SAP data?
Not so much. I know that, from a central finance standpoint, we see some customers where their S4 implementation revolves around central finance. And we do see some customers they do one of two things that we see a lot of. One is consolidating financial data from multiple ERP systems. I mean, we have one customer that has 37 SAP implementations. They have 37 different SAP ERP systems. Some are ECC, some are S4. Some of the ECC are still on traditional RDBMSs, but some of them are on HANA. So for that customer, their central finance is a massive consolidation project just from disparate SAP systems. But they're also bringing data in from non-SAP systems as well. And we see some customers doing that.
Let's take a look at the use cases. So I wonder, what do you see is driving use cases today? What are businesses trying to achieve, be it with or without SAP data?
For us at Qlik, what we see is everything boiling down into three directives. Figure out how to reduce costs and make the business run more efficiently. That's one. Second one is, how do we increase revenue? And the third is, how do we use our data to create a competitive advantage? So all of the use cases basically fall into those three categories. And, you know, these are things that companies are looking to do all the time. The difference now is that you can actually look at data at volume in real time and enable, you know, machine learning models train machine learning models to analyze that data and look for trends within that data that can be brought to the attention of the business leadership so they can act quicker. Those are kind of the high level key areas where we see the use cases.
Yeah. And our topic was modernization. I would think that a lot of the, let's say, AI, ML use cases are rather new. So probably they are also implemented on, let's say, modern or newer software stacks or software systems, while, let's say, the traditional use cases, probably there is some need for modernization. Could you bring that into perspective for us? Where do you see what's happening?
I mean, I look at the traditional use cases as, especially in the scope of modernizing your analytics platform. Traditional use cases are finding ways, you know, look at the same data or the same KPIs you've always been measuring, just in a more informative or, you know, prettier way. So a lot of the dashboard analytics, a lot of the stuff you see at the conferences and trade shows are designed for that. They're really designed to say, wow, look at this great visualization that I can see 10 different KPIs measured in one screen where I would normally have to look at 10 different BW reports. That's a traditional use case. The modern use cases is where things get exciting. I mean, the modern use cases is where you're looking for things within the data that you don't normally look for. Whereas when I talk to customers, I learn of use cases that are created, you know, based on obviously a need to accomplish one of those other three objectives, but there's no possible way you could have the resources or the people or the insight to physically identify all those optimizations. I mean, we have one customer that they look at it and say, okay, yes, we're always looking to reduce costs and optimize the business. However, we are so big that we know that there are micro efficiencies that we can mine for in the data. Where can we look for small changes in the data that are meaningful, that are impactful, but we're not going to notice them until the end of the quarter? We're not going to notice them until we're comprising our financial results and we all of a sudden notice that our cost of goods sold has increased, you know, by 2.5% unexpectedly. If you have machine learning models that are trained to look at the cost of goods sold and look at the individual cost of raw materials and identify when a vendor has increased their price, you know, 5x or 10x compared to what the normal pricing increases are for the other raw materials, you actually catch that. And we've even seen companies and customers create some automations there where if you're buying a raw material and you're sourcing it from three different vendors and one vendor increases their price outside of the scope of what's tolerable or what the others have done, the automation could automatically shift the purchase order or the purchasing process to one of the other vendors to control that cost. Can you imagine that? I mean, like, that could happen at 2:30 in the morning on a Tuesday and nobody actually touches it. Nobody does anything with it, but that automation there has protected the company. And again, a company that does billions and billions of revenue, you're looking at something there that could make a difference of a million or 2 million or $5 million on the bottom line just by that one shift happening in real time versus a change that might happen a week later when somebody actually notices that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very good example. Now, most traditional BI tools are more there to inform people. Yeah, so it's, I think, really more the dashboarding reporting use case that's typically being done. What you just described, I completely agree. That's, I think, a big direction the whole industry is taking, yeah, getting to more automation, to more, we call it operationalization, so getting more operational with BI. How's that technically done? How do you actually implement such a use case?
Yeah, this is the fun part of the conversation for us techies. The plumbing and the electric, it's a work of art, right? The way that, when we look at these architectures, the first thing you have to do is consider your sources. What data do you have? I mean, you obviously have ERP data, hopefully likely coming from SAP applications. You might have some cloud-based applications, data coming from Salesforce, Workday, ServiceNow, things like that. There might be some custom applications or custom databases. There might be some unstructured data coming from spreadsheets and IoT devices, things like that. So once you identify what all the, where the value is and what all the sources are, then you need to have one common platform, preferably, to move the data to a data lake data warehouse. So a data lake data warehouse is where you can consolidate all that. And what's key there is performance. The best way to get to real time is being able to measure the performance, move that data at volume, at scale, in real time. And real time is only as good as your highest latency application. Having a solution like what we have at Qlik with, Qlik Talent Cloud or Qlik Data Integration, we can give you like one pane of glass to see at any given point in time, if you have 100 different sources, what's the throughput, what's the latency, are any of those applications unavailable, things like that. So from an administrative standpoint, you could see, is my data flowing? Am I getting the full picture of all my data and landing it where I need to use it, which is the data lake data warehouse? But once you get that in that data lake data warehouse, that's another piece where you have to architecturally make a decision on what's the best landing spot for that data. Is it one of the solutions that you have with your cloud vendor? Is it a third-party cloud-based data lake or data warehouse? What data is best landed in a structured data warehouse versus a data lake? And how do I leverage it? So once you get it into that data lake, then you need to prepare it for consumption. And preparing it for consumption is, using a BW term, it's almost like, the DTP process of creating an info cube, organizing the data around that use case, modeling it, and generating those analytics-ready artifacts, like a data mart. That's the next piece. And that's something we do with Qlik Talent Cloud with our transformation capabilities. And then the last is obviously cataloging it and exposing it and applying the right governance to make sure that the people that need to use it can use it, have access to it, and it's readily available to them. And then the application architecture to do that. And the application architecture, for us at Qlik, it's QlikSense, which is an incredibly powerful analytics tool. Many companies use other analytics solutions, but you can also apply data science applications, data robot, other machine learning products as well. SaaS is something that we see still in the market. A lot of companies have used SaaS for 20, 30 years, and this is just a new way to leverage a data science application against that data. But there's a lot of plumbing. There's a lot of electric. Architectures vary from company to company wildly, and that's kind of a fun part of our job is to look at that and figure out, okay, what decisions have our customers made? How do we enable that? What are the use cases? What do we plug in? How do we make it work?
Now that you mentioned SaaS, I have to mention business objects, because we still see quite a good number of customers running partly very old business objects installation. And I wonder, what's your take on that? Why are it seems like BI applications can be very sticky in a way that they are simply not being replaced. And I wanted to ask you, do you see the same with your customers? Are there also something like 20-year-old Qlik applications that seem to run forever and are not being modernized?
We do. I mean, you know, people sometimes are change resistant, especially if something's working. Mm-hmm. You know, but at the same time, you know, you have to have some forethought. You have to look at where the market's going. You have to be willing and able to adapt. We do have some customers, you know, the predecessor to ClickSense was ClickView. We do have a lot of ClickView users still out there. I expect that, you know, we'll continue to see that. But, you know, that'll be kind of like with BW. You'll see some companies say, hey, look, there's some traditional things here that we've done that we don't see a reason to change. But at the same time, they still need to modernize. And that doesn't mean we have to modernize everything, but there is a lot. When you look at the vendor side of it, look at what SAP's done. So they've started end-of-lifing components of business objects. So they're obviously trying to help customers make a safe pivot from where they are. You know, they're not cutting them off completely and saying, oh, no more business objects. But certain components of business objects are being moved aside. And again, this goes back to the Datasphere conversation. You look at the evolution here. You know, Datasphere is not new. SAP had Data Warehouse Cloud. Data Warehouse Cloud's been out there for several years. It just didn't get much attention. So once SAP decided that was the future direction for their BW customers or their BI customers, you saw it rebranded, and you've seen a lot of other components be added to that. So, you know, I just look at it from a data integration standpoint and say, okay, SAP has a lot. They have SLT, they have smart data integration, smart data access, they have SAP data intelligence, they have business objects data services. Between data integration and ETL tools, there's just, you know, a whole bunch of things there. And from what I've seen is that the direction of Datasphere is they're looking to consolidate a lot of that. You know, me being, you know, having worked in the SAP world for 30 years, you know, you look at that and say, okay, well, how's that going to work? Is it going to work? What's the direction? So, you know, a lot of times SAP has taken products that haven't worked in the past and, you know, stapled them together with other stuff that hasn't worked to hope that the next evolution of it is going to work. And I think there's a lot of faith going in that that they're going to do that with Datasphere. But like I said, you know, that's going to be a good fit for very SAP central customers. But like, you know, I said earlier, you know, these analytics projects are being driven from a broader perspective, and we're seeing a lot of dynamic innovation in that space. And at Qlik, for us, we just look at it and say, what is the customer choosing? What is the customer deciding is best for them? And how do we position ourselves to help them achieve their objectives? Whether it be, you know, with SAP or without SAP, you know, we can load data into HANA. But we can load data into BigQuery too. We can load data into Microsoft Fabric. We can load data into Snowflake. So it's all about the customer for us. What are they trying to do? What are their use cases? And how do we, you know, be an impactful, positive aspect of their what they're trying to achieve?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you whether you see certain hotspots in the for modernization. You painted out like the architecture, starting with data integration, either more traditional or real-time. Then we have certain components like data warehouses or data lakes or the combination or lakehouse. And then we have different types of, let's call it types of analytics. So like BO often is more used for reporting use cases. Then we have more ad hoc analysis, often done with, for example, Bex Analyzer still or similar tools. Then we have machine learning AI cases. Do you see certain hotspots where a lot of SAP customers are working on?
Well, I think the hotspot that we're seeing evolve is two areas. One is the persona. Who's going to use the data? Because that audience is expanding greatly, especially with the onset of Gen AI. And the second is, honestly, the breadth of the use cases around the term analytics. You know, because if you go and ask people, explain analytics with SAP data to me, I think a lot of people are still going to think of visualization and dashboards. And, you know, what we're seeing is in my opinion, AI is a part of analytics. ML is a part of AI. Gen AI is a part of all that. So, like, it's all part of one big giant stack. And when you look at what Click is doing and some of the acquisitions we've made and some of the new features we've introduced, there's a lot of really cool things on the analytics side. I mean, I focus on the data and the data integration, but the analytics is where the color is. You know, that's where everything kind of comes together and gets really shiny. So we've looked at some research. The ASUG, America's SAP User Group, they publish a research piece called Pulse of the Customer every year. And we look at that and we go through it in detail. And we notice that analytics is like, I think this year it's like 62%, you know, as far as mind share and budget share. So mind share and wallet share as far as what SAP customers are thinking about and investing in. Analytics is always in that 60 percentile. It's been there for several years. So SAP customers know that analytics modernization is a top of mind topic. But then Gen AI, which last year was at like 23%, this year's at 38%. So that's a big jump. You know, so you look at it and say, okay, the persona is going to change. You know, it's not just going to be somebody emailing the SAP team saying, hey, can I get a report for this? Or the CFO needs a new report. And then, you know, 6 weeks later, a new info cube is developed and new BW reports are developed. You know, those days are gone. I mean, they might still do that, but the idea is to put the data in the hands of the average user, which is an average employee. Think of it in this sense. If I'm a sales rep and I'm preparing for a meeting with my customer tomorrow, instead of asking for reports or combing through Salesforce or building complex reports and trying to figure it out on my own, if I can have a conversation with the data, if I can say, "Hey, I'm meeting with Samsung tomorrow, for example. I'm meeting with Samsung tomorrow. I need to know what are the three largest volume products that they're buying from us? Are there? Can I get a list? I need a list of products they're buying more from us this year versus last year." And I need a list of products that they're buying less from us this year versus last year. And again, starting with an average, just non-IT person having a conversation with that data, these insights can just pop up right away. They can be available, and then they can dig into that data from there. So they're better prepared for that meeting with the customer tomorrow. So when they're meeting with the customer tomorrow, they might look at that and say, oh, There's a major product that they normally buy a lot from us, and they're buying 30% less of that product this year versus last year. Does that mean a competitor's in there? Does that mean our pricing is not aligned correctly? Is our relationship not okay? So when I go in as the sales rep to have that meeting with that customer, I can call that out. I can say, hey, we noticed that you've reduced your spend and your commitment with us around this product. Is there something we're not doing right? You know, so having, you know, those are the kind of really cool use cases where, from a hotspot standpoint, I see that really evolving. And, you know, I think companies, once they start getting their head around use cases for Gen AI, that's going to be a big piece of it. How do we put the data in the hands conversationally with our average everyday employees?
Yeah. So definitely a big jump. Like roughly a third of SAP customers are they implementing or looking at Gen AI use cases? Probably don't really.
Well, the research basically says mind share and wallet share. It's like, you know, yes, they might be investing, but they're thinking about it. And thinking about it is a big piece of it, because they're scoping a vision. And, you know, at Click, especially on our especially with our analytics solutions, we want to be a big part of that. I mean, one of the struggles for us is that some of these analytics products have really become a commodity. I mean, you look at what's happening with Power BI. It's almost available to everybody. So everybody is defining their experience around what they're experiencing with Power BI. And, you know, that challenges us, because we have to now educate our customers that, no, it's bigger than that. There's more you can do with the data. In-memory processing, real-time processing of this data, you can not only visualize it, but you can dig into it. You can ask questions of it. You can do text to SQL. You can do machine learning modeling with alerting. Like, there's hundreds of things that can be done to expand what you're doing with the data. One of my favorite sayings, you know, we have all these industry terms that pop up left and right, but human in the loop. I love the term human in the loop, because it takes the threat away from AI and analytics as far as it's going to eliminate my job. No, it's not going to eliminate your job. It's going to make it so that you essentially have a digital assistant to help you do your job. So things that normally you would have to spend hours doing, you can, if you organize your work, if you do your prompt engineering correctly, you can get that data provided and available to you in minutes instead of hours or days. And then you can then analyze it and act on it and create outcomes from that. So it really, really just speeds the process, makes employees more efficient. I'll be honest with you, you know, we do a lot of webinars. I do a lot of webinars. And every time our marketing team says, hey, you know, we're doing another webinar, we need you to write an abstract and a title and some sample questions. You know, there's, you know, a couple hours of my day and I got to figure out where I got to fit it in and, you know, in line with the deadline of when it needs to be done. I've used ChatGPT to help me generate that abstract and title within minutes. And then I edit it. I don't just submit it as is. I generate it, I edit it. And now something that would have taken me 2.5 hours to do, maybe took me 40 minutes to do.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's a good example for like a small productivity gain. But what we see is that Gen AI is more and more companies start to think about more that it's more really a collection of many small efficiency gains that actually generate the value out of it. And this is one example. And by the way, I do the same. It's a great way to brainstorm with a partner, with a buddy in a way. And
it's fun. Well, and you never know what mood you're going to be in. Obviously, it seems to me you give the same thing to Gen AI five or ChatGPT five different ways, or the same thing five different times, you get five different results. So it obviously can be in a mood too. But getting something that's consistent in quality helps you, you know, deliver something faster. In my experience.
For us being in the data analytics domain in a way, this ASAC survey you mentioned brought up quite an interesting result, I thought. The question was, what technologies are impacting your digital transformation efforts? So pretty broad question. And 62% number one result was data analytics and dashboards. So obviously in SAP customers, as you also said, data analytics, dashboards have a very high standing and also not only like to modernize data analytics, but overall to impact digital transformation in their organizations. Number two, 57%, was cloud. And I think that's a topic I wanted to ask you about you also is because obviously now this is something that's impacting SAP customers quite a lot now. Yeah, we mentioned HANA. Now it's the S4 migration wave in a way is going on. We have Datasphere, SAC, which are cloud-based products. So obviously there's a lot going on. You mentioned that you come more from the data side, and that's my question now. From a data management perspective, with all these cloud transformations or cloud migrations often going on in the SAP customers, what's your advice here from a data management perspective? How can you basically improve the process or improve the likelihood that it's a successful migration in the end? What can be done from a data perspective?
Well, I think what I've seen is, well, first of all, cloud is an inevitability. For every organization, I think, you know, from an application sense, it breaks down into two things. You have native cloud apps versus things that have been traditionally on-prem. And a native cloud app, the perfect example of a native cloud app is Salesforce. It was built on cloud. It was always available on cloud. Every implementation that anybody's ever done of Salesforce has been cloud-based. So there's only one way to look at that. You know, so it's got its paradigm. SAP, on the other hand, is different. Everybody's been familiar with the client-server architecture. SAP R3 was always, you know, database server, central instance, application instances, all on-prem. Again, I was a basis guy back in the day, so I did this all day and all night, and I loved it. So the move from something like that to the cloud, it it's a huge paradigm shift. I mean, you have companies that are like, we have a 100 terabyte SAP ECC system, and we have 8 non-production systems, and we have CRM and BW and GTS, and you know, we've got all this hardware on the floor. Like, it's, you know, it's a lot to move. Like, the concept of moving to the cloud without constituting a reimplementation is overwhelming. And you know, I think that's what SAP is trying to do with Rise, is trying to help customers eat the elephant one bite at a time and make the jump. But you know, for most legacy SAP environments or customers, it's difficult. So we've seen those customers from a data perspective look at cloud adoption from a workload perspective. What's the next thing I'm going to do with my data? And that's where analytics obviously has been a big piece of it, because if a customer is implementing Snowflake or implementing Google BigQuery, that's only in the cloud. So if I'm going to leverage a cloud data warehouse, I need to be comfortable in replicating and moving my data from my on-prem SAP into that cloud data warehouse. And that's palatable. That's something I can get my head around. So the CIOs and the directors and the VPs out there are looking at it going, okay, this is good. This is a baby step. We can move workloads, SAP workloads, to the cloud as necessary, and then we'll expand from there. So we see a lot of that. This is also different from net new SAP customers. Net new SAP customers are being offered S4 only. They're only being offered S4 cloud. So their paradigm is more in line with that Salesforce example. What they're buying from SAP is a cloud-based instance of S4HANA, whether it be public cloud or private cloud, and then they choose which cloud they want to run it on. So the paradigm is pretty straightforward for those customers. So it's really just the, you know, tens of thousands of Fortune 500 and Fortune, you know, Global 2000 companies that have been running SAP for 20, 30 years that are, you know, that are looking at it and struggling with that move. But I think they all know the cloud's an inevitability. We see customers at every spectrum of that journey. You know, and like I said, you know, we've all seen with Rise, SAP is trying to figure out how to help those customers make that move. You know, I look at Rise and say, okay, it's a motion where, you know, get the HANA stragglers, get the stragglers on HANA, get the ECC customers on S4 and get them into the cloud. They pick the cloud. You know, the thing I think that is a challenge with Rise is that it's SAP's tenant. So SAP manages the environment. And, you know, me as a basis person, a legacy basis person, I think there's a lot of power and value in managing the entire architecture end to end, managing, you know, the operating system and the system resources, managing the database level access, and managing the application. I see it as like one cohesive piece, and, you know, giving up control of some of that, you know, takes some of the, you know, takes some of the architectural control out of the customer's hands. So, you know, in that sense, I think we'll see some SAP customers that choose Rise because that works for them. I think we'll see some of them do a move to cloud outside of Rise, so that they can maintain their own tenant and some and maintain control of the technical architecture.
Yeah, Matt, thanks so much for all your insights. Our time is up, unfortunately. I think we could have covered way more ground. But anyway, to close it up, maybe you could give us a bit of a summary or your advice. If we now look at the whole topic, architecture modernization from a data analytics perspective, in a way, what are your top recommendations? What should companies or people really look at?
Okay, that's a big question. I think the biggest thing that they should look at is what is the best technical architecture that fits their use case and what they're intending to do with the data. And when I say that, I like to start conversations with customers more around the use case and the business outcome. What is the business outcome you're looking to achieve? What are the use cases that you think are going to get you there? And then we back into the technology. And that's kind of new because, you know, at Qlik, we've really been very busy developing and integrating our solutions. And when you look at the history of Qlik, with some of the great functionality we've added with the talent acquisition, with the Attunity acquisition 5 or 6 years ago, you know, the capabilities of Qlik have really expanded. So it allows me in talking with our field and our customers to start at that business outcome use case level, because I know that there are components in the Qlik stack and the Qlik platform that are going to fit every piece of that use case. Now, they don't need to fit every single one, but when the architecture comes together for that customer, whether they come to us with it fully defined or they need some assistance and vision with it, we know that we can be not only provide the solution, but we can also be a trusted advisor. And like I said, you know, we're very agnostic on the sources, agnostic on the target, agnostic on the consumption side. So we can really keep a customer-minded focus to help them bring that all together. So, and for me, that's really exciting, because the result of the use case is something that I don't get to hear very often, because we're so focused on the implementation and enabling the technologies. But when I get an opportunity to talk to a customer, whether it be at an advisory board meeting or meeting with customers face-to-face or at our Qlik Connect conference, hearing what they're doing with it and how it's impacting their business is so refreshing, because that's the goal, you know, helping them get to where they want to be and achieving one of those key objectives in reducing costs, increasing revenue, creating a competitive advantage. That's where we get fed, because then I get those use cases and that gives me some ideas as far as what do we need to do next? What do we need to do next with our software, with our solutions that can help this customer take that, you know, go from where they are, where they want to be, to where the next step is.
Yeah, thanks so much, mate. That was really great. And I wish you all the best with your
Yeah, endeavors. Thank you, Karsten.
It's great to talk to you, and I can only say bye-bye.
Yeah, I appreciate the time. It's always fun to talk about this, so thank you very much.